You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network. Tuesday, All Marine Radio continues here, and privileged for the first time to have on the program Jeff Schogel. He is a writer for Marine Times, and so we're going to find out about him and then talk about something that he wrote that we actually talked about on the program yesterday. So, Jeff, first of all, thanks for doing this.
Pleasure to be here.
All right. Well, talk to us. First of all, we got to meet you a little bit, if you don't mind. So, born and raised where?
I grew up in Philadelphia, went to college out in the Midwest, first in Indiana and then in Chicago. Started work as a reporter in eastern Pennsylvania, eventually became part of Stars and Stripes, and then I've been working for the Military Times since December 2011. Joined Marine Corps Times in December 2015.
Well, back that up. So where'd you do your undergrad?
I did my undergrad at Indiana University, Bloomington.
Okay.
And then I went to grad school at Northwestern.
So how did you decide to do journalism? How did it get in your head?
Well, I went to college with lofty ideals about being some kind of a writer, and it became pretty apparent that that wouldn't pay the bills. So I needed a plan, and since I wrote for the campus newspaper, I thought this would be the best thing to do. So I applied for grad school at Northwestern, and that's where I learned how to be a reporter.
And did you have in your head at all the idea of doing military reporting, or how did that darken your doorstep?
I'd wanted to do something about the military for quite some time. It was always an interest growing up, and when I was at the paper in Easton, Pennsylvania, I kind of became the de facto military reporter after the Iraq War started. I would be covering the local stories, the local veterans. And I don't know if you remember, but in March of 2003, in that grenade attack in Kuwait, one of the soldiers killed, there was a soldier and an Air Force officer killed. The soldier grew up in Easton, Pennsylvania. So I ended up covering the court-martial at Fort Bragg for the soldier accused in that grenade attack. And afterwards, I applied to Stars and Stripes, and I said, I've kind of been doing military reporting in addition to everything else. I would like to do it as my full-time job.
And they had no issue with that?
Stars and Stripes, they were great. They said, yes, we need someone to cover the Pentagon. And I did that for several years, during which I wrote a column called The Rumor Doctor that debunked long-standing tales of military lore. It didn't always get fans. I debunked a certain myth about the blood stripe, and that certainly did not sit well with some Marines. But
yeah, why are you doing stuff like that? What kind of punk are you pouring a little truth serum on us? Come on.
Well, in all fairness, this is something that the history division does talk about, and when they discuss the Battle of Chapultepec and the real story of the blood stripe, people are constantly amazed. But in some cases, it's a public service. For example, Army NCOs used to learn where the match was at the ball at the top of the main flagpole on the base, where if the base was overrun, they would have to climb the flagpole, get the match out, burn the flag, and then shoot themselves. And they were surprised to hear that this was all a myth, that the Army did not require soldiers to shoot themselves or go up the flagpole, and some refused to believe it. They still, stood fast that certain amount of paces from the flagpole, there was the pistol buried, which they were going to have to dig up and use if their base was ever overrun. So,
you know what? Can you give us a thumbnail version of the blood stripe story? First, the myth and then reality.
The myth is that so many NCOs and officers were killed at the Battle of Chapultepec that the red stripe was added, I believe, when you become corporal. to commemorate that battle. In fact, the casualties were not as high as the myth suggests. Also, the stripe itself was taken from an army uniform, believe it or not.
God.
And so the entire ethos, not ethos isn't the right word, the entire lore of the blood stripe is just that. It's a myth. There's no foundation to it whatsoever. I mean, several corporals, when they got their blood stripe in, yeah, they got ceremonially, you know, they got that thing beaten on, but no, it doesn't commemorate the loss of NCOs at the Battle of Chapultepec.
Oh, my God, how awful! How awful for us. The what was the most controversial one you ever debunked that caused the most anxiety?
Well, there were many. I'd have to think about that one. Well, the one that was the most fun was a Chinese paper was claiming that the Taliban were training monkeys in Afghanistan to kill American soldiers, and they showed some picture of a chimpanzee with a toy gun. And I actually ran this one down. I called up the spokesman at the Chinese embassy, and I said, this was in the daily communist newspaper. I forget, it's called People's Daily. This is the house organ for the Communist Party. Where are you getting this information? And they claimed it came from British researchers. But I did call up the folks in Afghanistan, and I said, are you seeing Taliban-trained monkeys attack U.S. soldiers? And they were not. And I called up an expert on primates who said, well, you'd have to, you know, if a monkey fired a weapon, it would be a danger to everyone, not just U.S. soldiers. So that would not really be, you know, feasible.
Interesting. No, this might be a better interview than what I was planning on. But we do love our legends, don't we? I mean, did you find it moderately amusing how much we love our lore?
Well, it's more than just moderately amusing. I did a story about whether the Germans called the Marines Teufelhunden. Now, I really researched this, and I called up someone at the German military archives, and I asked about this, and he said, listen, there is no word in German devil dog. And he said the closest is you could refer to Cerberus, the dog that guarded the underworld, but there is no Teufelhunden isn't an expression. And I wrote the story, and I remember getting one of the most brilliantly obscene emails I've ever gotten from a Marine. I kept it for many years, but I can't seem to find it, in which he said something to the effect of the next time he was going to be in the field, he was going to use Stars and Stripes for toilet paper, which I really don't recommend because printer's ink does not go well when you use. I mean, it's just going to leave a rash. But it was, you know, the amount of, you know, it was just a thing of beauty to behold, and I actually showed it to a Marine Corps colonel, and I said, this is really, you know, something. But, yeah, there is a lot of passion behind the Marine Corps lore, and I think it goes back to recruit training.
Right.
Most civilians, when they think of recruit training, they think of dawn to dusk exercise.
Right.
And there's no real concept of learning the Marine Corps' history. And one of the things I found out early on is that every Marine is a PhD in history, and they can recite, I mean, they can just tell you, they can tell you battles that most Americans have forgotten. They can talk about Tripoli, the average American cannot remember what Thomas Jefferson did against the Barbary pirates. But no, Marines are very, very passionate about this, and it feeds into the high esprit de corps. Because as you can know, Marines train to a higher standard because they believe they are part of something bigger than themselves. So, you know, when some no-good Nick like me comes along and says, that's all well and good, but not everything you learned in recruit training is true in the literal sense, it does really make some folks angry. I still remember the comments. They were great. One said that I was a long-haired hippie. I never had long hair, so he must have confused me for something else.
I remember reading the Teufelhund thing and thinking, no, come on, where would something like that come from? Who would make it up? You know, our propagandists, they would just make that up? Come on, that has to be true. Who is this guy?
Yeah, well, we got into one gentleman who knew German. I spent some time in Germany as a kid, got back and forth, and we started going over grammar. And I asked my boss if I needed to write some kind of follow-up about what tense the word was in. He said no. But he made some good points, but I really went back and forth with the German military officer about this. And he said this was 100 years ago. Is it possible that there were expressions back then that are not in use now?
Yeah.
You know, think about it now, possibly, but... Mm-hmm. It's also safe to say that the Marines who wrote home and said that the Germans are calling them devil dogs, they certainly believed that. I'm not going to say that they were willfully telling something that was wrong.
Where does it first appear, Jeff? Where is it first identified?
As far as I can remember, it was from the Marines themselves that they were writing home and say the Germans, you know, their name for us are devil dogs, and I believe this got picked up by there was a large number of people during World War I whose job was to support the war effort by telling stories and drawing pictures. It was really unprecedented. I think the bureau, I forget its name, it grew to a size just incredibly huge. I want to say a million people, but that's probably an exaggeration by a factor of 10. But as soon as these letters started making home, suddenly you started seeing posters. And my favorites were, this was 100 years ago, saying the toots being short for Teutonics, were calling our Marines devil dogs. And you saw at least one poster which showed this as a picture. And, you know, once it became part of the vernacular, became part of the era, then it became ingrained in history.
Right. I know, because I have a T-shirt that says it, my OCS T-shirt. Mm-hmm. Actually, it's I think he's a major general now. Craig Timberlake was my platoon sergeant. And I think Timberlake's Teufelhunds or something like that.
Teufelhunden, yeah. Well, one thing I found out subsequent to writing the story is you don't say devil dog to someone when things are going well. Typically, you know, you say devil dog when someone's about to get chewed out, as in, come over here, devil dog, we need to have a conversation. So this is just, these are things I learned on the job.
Yeah, I never learned it that way. It was just something that I heard it used affectionately. I heard people call it devil, come here, devil, what are you doing? And so I never really heard it. I did hear it used derogatorily, but it was kind of an equal opportunity phrase. It's very interesting to me how much we don't view it as simply another branch of the service. It is a spiritual experience for us, and
it definitely is.
And we embrace it as such.
Now the Army tried to get some of this spirit in 2000 when the chief of staff, who later became the head of the VA, said, why don't we give all soldiers black berets?
Yeah.
Black berets are symbols of excellence. They're worn by Rangers. Backfired in just such a huge level. No soldiers liked the beret. First of all, it doesn't keep sun out of your eyes. Second of all, it's black, so it absorbs heat. And they just could not capture the same esprit de corps that the Marine Corps has. So, but as I said, it goes back to, you know, once you join, you learn the culture.
Right.
And every single event in Marine Corps history, from Tun's Tavern to today.
You know, what's interesting is the Iwo Jima Monument casts a long, and I use that as kind of a euphemism for Marine Corps history, cast a long shadow. And I remember the first time going into Iraq, and, you know, you don't know what's going to happen, and you don't know, you know, whether you'll survive or not. And I remember thinking, you know, like, I don't really know what's going to happen, but I know this. There's an awful lot of guys and women that have gone before me, and I'm not going to let that history down. I mean, that's how pregnant with thought and feeling that history is to us, which is, you know, which is interesting. Of all the thoughts you could have, you know, that the effect, the history would have that long of a reach in terms of esprit de corps. And when I was at the armor course in Fort Knox, I was at the advanced armor course as I was a captain on my way to take over in light armored reconnaissance company, light armored infantry now. I remember we were at a mess night and soldiers were, you know, standing around drinking and whatnot. And they came up to me and there was probably three Marine officers, and we were talking, and one of them said, "You know what we hate about you the most?" I was like, really? And, if you walk up to one of you guys and say, "Are you in the military?" You guys, every one of you says the same thing. "I'm a Marine." You don't say, "I'm airborne." You don't say, "I'm armor." You don't say, "I'm a leg." You don't say, you don't say anything else. All you say is, "I'm a Marine." And we don't have that in our service. And we hate that about you. And then we said, "What about our dress blue uniforms? You can't like that either." They said, "No, we hate those too." But you know, interesting stuff, Jeff. And again, just so I have this right, when did you start writing for Marine Times?
Well, I started in late 2015, in December 2015. I'd say 18 months at this point.
Okay. All right. Tell us about writing for them. Is it different in any way, shape, or form?
Well, it in the sense that when you write for the military, you get used to writing to an audience that understands details. And when you get a detail wrong, our audience is very helpful in letting me know what I got wrong and have several things about myself which I didn't realize, and you know, putting aside any doubts whether my parents were related before they got married, you know, they're very helpful that way. But it is different than, say, writing about the Air Force, because the Marine Corps is constantly changing how Marines are evaluated. In the time I've been there, I've written about, I can't remember how many changes to the PFT or the CFT or other changes to make sure that the Marines are strong, that they're fit, that they're advancing. And when I covered the Air Force, there was a review of physical fitness. They looked at it, but it wasn't that constant sense of we need to keep looking at what we're doing, see what isn't working and what is working, just to make sure we're as best as we possibly can. So I would say that's the thing I've noticed, is it's constantly churning, constantly changing, never satisfied, that the Marines feel they can always be better. And as General Neller had said, you know, you make the changes when you're at, you know, when you're on top.
Right. It's a paranoid organization. You know, the nation doesn't need a Marine Corps. The nation wants a Marine Corps. We do more with less. We do, right, all of that stuff. I mean, from day one, right? It's ingrained in you from day one. It's interesting. I'm curious about your thoughts, because it's kind of interesting, because you didn't grow up with a parent that was a Marine or any kind of influence that would, you know, that would say, you know, my mom and dad were both Marines, or my dad was a Marine, and so I kind of, you know, wanted to someday write for a publication like Marine Corps Times. I'm just curious about your observation about the culture in general. What do you like about it? What do you not like about it? Because our strength can turn around and be our weakness in terms of our self-infatuation. Certainly, at times is a little bit over the top, but it also is one of our strengths. So I'm curious, as somebody who watches us from as an outsider, I love this question, but tell me about our strength and tell me about a weakness that you see for us.
Yep. Without getting into matters of opinion, because there's, you know, there's a famous joke about what opinions are like, and the punchline is everyone has one.
Right.
I would say the Marine Corps' greatest strength can be its greatest weakness, and that is its willingness to accept risk. And when you take a look at aviation, that's a perfect example in that Marines in the last 16 years have literally flown the wings off of every aircraft to make sure that they could give combatant commanders what they need. And they've accepted that risk, and the problem is the funding for new aircraft and the timeline for new aircraft, namely like the F-35 and the CH-53K, has been much slower than they originally anticipated. And that's one reason why you have the problem with Hornets, is that the Marine Corps expected to have been able to retire F-18 Hornets by now because they were going to have so many F-35Bs and F-35Cs. But because the program kept getting delayed, they are finding new ways to extend these aircraft, and they're trying to now reset the entire CH-53E fleet. Those helicopters, they at one point they were the most cannibalized aircraft in Marine Corps inventory. So they will go and they will accomplish that mission, but if they do not get the support they expect, you have this situation where Marine aviation, the Marines are working tirelessly day and night to improve readiness, but it is a crisis.
It's in a ditch, and it's extremely sobering when you see readiness numbers that, that 25% of the Hornets could get in the air. You look at that and it's absolutely astounding. And I think, my grandmother used to say, the road to hell is paved with good intentions. But at some point it is when you, having done this show for now, almost a year, it'll be a year on the 1st of June. I did not know that many footnotes about the aviation situation. And as I've done more and more, interviews devoted to it to include Lieutenant General Davis and a variety of the Commandant on, how did we get here? Whose fault is this? And you look at the tangled web, between the Navy and the Marine Corps, between operational decisions, between political decisions, sequestration, all the different things that happened to put us in the ditch. You just look at it and you shake your head. But the one thing, as you said, that we put the greatest premium on is those aircrafts that go down range and making sure that we can have those, be ready and go. And we'll put Band-Aids on everything else. And so, but at the same time, a point well made. Jeff, we got to take a break. We haven't even started the interview, so we have to take a break. My guest today from the Marine Corps Times is Jeff Schogel. Am I saying that right, Jeff Schogel?
Yes. Yep.
All right. He's written an article. He's actually written two of them that caught my eye here recently. One is called "New Concerns That Lower Fitness Standards." Hold on one second. Lower fitness standards fuel disrespect for women. And the second one is something that I talked to somebody who was on the program last week about war in North Korea. What would it look like? Because it's not going to be a few Tomahawk missiles and then we'll take a pause and then diplomatic efforts will ensue. When you light that war off against North Korea, it's not going to stop quickly. So that's also caught my eye. So he wrote that with a gentleman by the name of Todd Sal. So we're going to take a quick break. We're going to come back and talk about lower fitness standards and disrespect in the Marine Corps. More of All Marine Radio coming up next right here on the All Warrior Radio Network. This hour of All Marine Radio is brought to you by our friends at Battle Mug, home of the world-famous Battle Mug. Starts as 10 pounds of aluminum. It's milled, machined, anodized, adorned with Picatinny rails, and then stamped with the serial number, and it's ready for you to make your own. Anything that went on your rifle or pistol can go on your mug. Scope, laser, camera, light. Put a lid on it, and you're ready for the field. If you're inside, add a flag and an emblem, and you're set. Perfect for any commemorative event. Farewell, promotion, retirement, birthday, anniversary, or get out of the doghouse. The Battle Mug is the perfect unique gift. Check out the entire line of product at BattleMug.com. Enter the promo code Marine for 15% off. BattleMug is a veteran-owned and operated company. The product is made entirely in the United States. Check it out, BattleMug.com.
My name is Juan Perez, Jr. I joined the military in 98. I commissioned as an officer. But I always had in mind the idea that I would go into the special operations community, particularly the special forces. I was accepted to go into selection, and I attended on September 8th of 2001. As I was making my departure out of the military, there was that uncertainty. What do I do next? How do I repurpose my skills in a way that's not only meaningful to me, but also that provides for my family and provides an increase in our a way of living, a quality of life. The Global South Foundation has resources when it comes to anything from building resumes to how to relate to a CEO in conversation, how to basically, again, repurpose that which I had learned in a career in special operations, dealing at the strategic and operational level. How do I take that and then turn it towards entrepreneurial spirit into business development? And how do I translate that so somebody can see that value? And in doing so, I landed a magnificent and very rewarding career. I'm the VP of operations for an IT company called BuildSourced. What I say to veterans getting out, be bold. Be bold when you go to network. Go out to the GlobalSoft website, and look at what events they have lined up, attend those events, you know, and participate. A lot of the events they hold, they're of key importance in this network. Go out there and engage, just like you would engage in a combat zone, you know, when you're networking there with folks that don't share necessarily your language, your culture, or your background, and yet we still make it happen. How can we not make it happen here?
The Global Soft Foundation is a great partner of All Marine Radio. Find out more about them at globalsoftfoundation.org/Marines. Are you Mustangs? Listen up. The Marine Corps Mustang Association is comprised of Marine Corps officers and officers from other military services who share a common background. They're a group of men and women who initially enlisted and served with distinction in the Marine Corps and the Marine Corps Reserve enlisted ranks. The term Mustang refers to a commissioned or warrant officer who has risen from the enlisted rank. In their 33rd year of existence, the association continues to dedicate itself to the advocacy of professional development and encouragement of younger Marines, demonstrating a pathway for advancement and offering mentoring, advice, and camaraderie over the course of their military service and civilian careers. The Marine Corps Mustang Association is looking for a few good Mustangs to join their association. Contact them via their website at MarineCorpsMustang.org, or you can find them on Facebook. Go ahead and like them there. Most importantly, join their association and help them continue the great work that they do. That's the Marine Corps Mustang Association. Join it today.
MilitaryByOwner.com is an excellent resource for any military family moving to a new area. We found a ton of homes to choose from and purchased a house 8 days later. This was the only site I used. Thanks, Military by Owner.
Are you PCSing? Do you need to find a home near a military base quickly? With over 45,000 listings and 15 years of experience helping military families find, sell, or rent their home near a military base, MilitaryByOwner.com can help. Military by Owner. Proven and dependable.
You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
Surprised to hear that.
On a Tuesday, we continue. My guest is Marine Corps Times writer, Jeff Shogel. The appropriate term would be reporter, Jeff?
If either one works.
Okay. All right. Well, reporter, we talk about journalism here in the technical sense, so I hate to screw that up. But,
no, that's fine.
All right. And we're going to talk about something that he wrote. And talk to us about different fitness standards between men and women, and the pipeline would be you're going to come through MOS training, you're going to pass one set of standards, you're going to go to the operating forces, and you have two sergeants, one's a male, one's a female, and the male sergeant's going to be held to a different standard physically than the female sergeant is, arguably in better physical shape But the female sergeant, because of the differences between how genders are treated relative to physical fitness and the physical fitness test and the combat fitness test, will get higher scores and possibly promoted, everything else being equal, than her male counterpart. First of all, how does the story get on your radar?
Well, you know, just to make things clear, I wasn't writing about whether a woman might get a higher score and get promoted. What I kept reading from comments was men who felt that women were not meeting the same physical standards on the PFT and the CFT, and that prevented them from seeing women as equal. And it was actually, I was talking to the author of the Terminal Max comic strip. Earlier this year, we were doing a story about this Marines United group, and I was asking him, what is it that prompts male Marines to disrespect women? And he said, well, one thing is the PFT and the CFT, where male Marines will say, if a woman doesn't have to meet the same physical standards that I do, I'm not going to show her as much respect as I would a male Marine. The other thing, which I didn't get into, is male Marines resenting women for not having to get the haircut every week. But what, getting back to the PFT and the CFT, this is really the crux of what the issue is that begat Marines United. When you look at where does the perception start among male Marines that their female counterparts are not as good as them, what I'm hearing from people posting on our Facebook page and also from Max and from just the discussion seems to be that male Marines feel that the physical standards on the PFT and CFT should be the same for men and women. And that's when I started looking into, okay, is this physiologically possible? Men and women have very different anatomies. Men have bigger hearts. Starting at puberty, men get a lot of testosterone that allows them to put on a lot more muscle. But doing the research, I found that it's possible for women to achieve these standards. However, it will take time, and it takes proper training. And one thing I wanted to make clear, we got a few helpful comments after the story came out, which we use the term lower to talk about the objective sense of what women have to accomplish. If you're between 17 and 20, a male Marine has to get 20 pull-ups to max out his PFT score. A woman has to do 7. But that doesn't mean that the Marine Corps has lowered standards for women. In fact, in the past year, they've made them tougher.
Right.
Women now have to do more pull-ups. They have to do more ammo can lifts. So that was something I didn't realize when I wrote the story, is that people could read it that way.
Right.
The other thing I just wanted to make clear, which someone pointed out, is that it's not just the Marine Corps that has separate standards for men and women. This is DOD-wide. The DOD instruction says that all the services are able to adjust these standards based on gender and age, which they do. When I was talking to people, I talked to one former major who said it is possible to run as fast as a man. She was running at one point an 18-minute 3-mile, but because she was a woman, she wasn't expected to train past what she was past the female standard, 21 minutes. So her running ability actually atrophied. And that's just the comments I keep running into, which is if you expect less from women, they will perform less well. But you know, the flip side of that is that men take a look at that at women and say, well, they must not be as capable as men are. And that's not necessarily true. It is possible for women to do pull-ups. It is possible for them to lift an ammo can. There are definite physiological differences, but they can be overcome with training. So, you know, I started it looking at through that angle and then get into how this, you know, apparent inequality or this perception problem was leading to this broader issue where you have men saying that female Marines are not equals. In fact, as far as I can tell, from the comments we've received, it's not so much that these male Marines believe that women in general are not as strong as men, is that they are specifically focused on female Marines. And it all traces back to the PFT and the CFT. I should note that other physical standards have become gender neutral. When poolees and then recruits ship for basic training, they have to meet an initial strength test and an MLS classification standard that's based on their contract, what MLS they're contracting for, not what their gender is. And then when they go to MLS schoolhouses, they have to pass physical standards that are based on that MLS, not what their gender is. Okay. I have put in a Freedom of Information Act request to see what is the pass-fail rate for men and women, because what I've heard just through the grapevine is since these gender-neutral standards were put in, they're seeing a good deal of men failing as well, showing that you really can train for the job as opposed to train based on gender. So far, I haven't gotten the results on that.
All right. I want to go back to your comment about the genesis of Marines United. When you talk about Marines, I want to footnote that. When you talk about Marines United, you're not, it ultimately entails the weaponizing, my term, of an image with personal data. You're not talking about that per se. You're talking about the sentiment that creates a group of people that we share this view,
right,
and express it.
Right. What happened on Marines United is based on this view that female Marines and women in general are less than men. And I was trying to find out, okay, where does this come from?
Okay.
And that's what I was talking to the creator, Colonel Max, said, where does this intense feeling come from? And one source appears to be, and this appears to be confirmed by what our readers are posting on Facebook, is that men in the Marine Corps feel that they are not going to view their female counterparts as equals until they have to pass the same PFT and CFT standards.
Yeah, and let me just a comment about that. Well, they can't be equal because the systems are equal, and the women's CFT and PFT were put in place to make them competitive with males for cutting scores and promotion. So the Marine Corps has institutionalized this. So my response to somebody who says, well, you know, it's Jim Crow, it's separate but equal, and the male perception is it's not equal, and they're not equal to us. My response to that would be, well, duh. The whole system is designed as a handicap system to make them equal so that they can compete. Because if you had one system, the judgment of the Marine Corps is they couldn't compete effectively and they couldn't get promoted. So we have this system. Am I logically flawed?
What I can tell you is what I talked to a doctor who works with both the military and the law enforcement.
Okay.
And he said, the goal isn't so much a system, it's a standard. And it's very difficult to find one standard for men and women. And this becomes even more complicated when it is biologically possible it's biologically correct to say a woman is fit and a man is fit, and you have two completely different sets of standards when it comes to strength and endurance.
Right.
So it should be noted that the PFT and CFT are general fitness tests.
Okay.
They're not to determine how well you can do your job, how well you can do your MOS, or how well you'll do in combat. So the goal of the PFT and the CFT is to just create a baseline for physical fitness to make sure that men and women are strong enough to then go on and do things like the MOS standards and then ultimately be ready for combat.
Right.
That's how it was explained to me when I was researching this.
That they're baselines for fitness.
Right. I mean, this is not the MOS-specific standards.
Right.
This is going to be the confusing thing is when you call it the combat fitness test, people are going to assume that, okay, you're seeing how well you can do in combat, when actually this is mainly to make sure that you are strong enough and you have the endurance enough to be able to go on and do other things.
My guest this morning from Marine Corps Times is Jeff Shogel. We're talking about an article that is in the current edition, dated May 21st, 2017. New concerns that lower fitness standards fuel disrespect for women. So your conclusion, Jeff, is that there is validity to this link between two standards and then the male view that they're not interchangeable, they're not as good as us, they're not as fit as us.
I would just say that the comments we have seen seem to substantiate that feeling, where one of them I can remember is something to the effect of, you're not equal until you, if you want to be seen as equals, you have to pass equal standards. So these seem to validate what I have been hearing. And just to be clear, I'm not speaking on behalf of these people. I'm just saying what they are saying. The question then becomes, well, is it possible to have one standard for men and women? And that's where it gets a little more complicated. I've talked to people who say, yes, it's possible. Then other people say, but you probably won't get as many women who can pass these standards. One major I talked to said with proper training and with proper training, yes, and motivation, you will see women perform better. But, you know, to be clear, I'm not a medical doctor. I'm just relaying information that was that I was told. So, yeah, it gets complicated. If you, the doctor I mentioned who said it's possible, it's biologically correct to say a woman is fit and a man is fit, and you have two different sets of standards, said it would be very difficult to find one standard for both men.
But when you're talking about, and it's kind of interesting, would the Marine Corps consider embracing, if you opt for the combat arms, you opt for the male fitness test, because there's only, or whatever fitness test we create, there's only one fitness standard in that part of the Marine Corps.
Yeah.
It would be interesting. I don't know that they could ever accept that, because then all of a sudden, but to me, it is what would make that MOS field truly equal, in that, hey, we do everything the same. Nobody gets any second standard. We are all the same here. Either you pull your weight, you carry the load, or you don't. And if you don't, and if you can't, you know, and if you can't do the pull-ups, if you can't do the, you know, the run, if you can't do whatever, then you can't be part of this MOS. And I do, I personally believe that's true. The Marine Corps ought to, and there'll be women that can do it, no doubt in my mind. There'll be very unique women physically that can go out and do it. It won't be easy, certainly, because she's got to be physically unique and then train above what a normal female Marine would train to. She's got to train to be a male. And that's, as you said, very different standards for, you know, a very fit female and a very fit male. In fact, I mean, you could, and again, I'd be curious about your thoughts on this comparison. You could have, I know twins that play on the U.S. Women's National Olympic team, ice hockey. And they're at the top end in terms of being physically fit hockey players. I know a couple guys who play in the National Hockey League. The comparison between at the very, very high end is not even a comparison. You know, and so you know, arguably, you know, you can have extremely fit women who are still going to struggle with the male standard, and then to link their promotions, to link their fitness reports, to link all that stuff to that is very difficult. But I'm hearing the argument in my head, but the environment is very difficult. If they're not up to that, then they'll never be considered equal. And I think that is the institutional problem that the Marine Corps is running into. Your thoughts about that? Because you can tell Marines, you know, hey, look, you know, we're all Marines, you know, and look, we don't have to demean and weaponize pictures and stuff like that not to respect somebody. If in our eyes they haven't earned it, I don't care if you're a man, a female, a dog, a Martian, you don't rate that respect, and you won't get it. You've got to earn it. And that, to me, very much is part of the Marine Corps. You earn it. We all go through it together. And if you don't go through it together, if you're treated differently, then you're going to stand out. And I'll go back to Marines that become corporals under contract. It's not a good thing. And the Marine Corps adopted that, gone away from it, adopted it, and it's a bad thing. And those guys get treated differently because you didn't earn it. Your thoughts on all of that?
Well, I would say that the Marine Corps has consistently said they're not going to lower standards, mm-hmm. and that I can tell you that the women who have gone to combat arms MOSs have met the same standards as men for their MOS. I was interviewing the first two women who are artillery officers,
mm-hmm.
and I said, so for the job, don't you have to take the hive down, which I believe is 6 155 Mike shells, each is about 100 pounds, and you put it on a truck in a certain amount of minutes? They said, yes, we did that. So they have to meet the same standards as men. The women who have joined the infantry battalion have also met the same standards as men. When I talked to former assistant commandant, General Jay Paxton, he also said that women in infantry squads would meet the same standards as men, and that ultimately would inspire confidence from their male counterparts. But I can assure you, no one in the Marine Corps is talking about lowering standards to allow women into ground combat MOSs. It's simply not going to happen.
Right.
And that the female Marines who have made it into those units so far have done so on their own merits.
All right. Tell me, is there another story that's brewing out of this story about lower fitness standards, fuel, disrespect for women? And I'll tell you what, I don't care what organization you're a part of. If the perception is that you didn't earn your way to where you are, you're going to struggle with respect. And I don't care if it's a gender thing. I don't care what it is. You know, as an officer, you go through a certain amount of that, you know, to prove yourself, because you don't come from their part of the tribe. So when you're there, you've got to, you know, and I don't care if it's, you know, we have all these different stupid initiations that we do in the Marine Corps. When you go become the 50 cal platoon commander, you lug that receiver on a hike, and I mean it buckles people, but that's your rite of passage. And if you don't go through that like everybody else does, there's a part of them that doesn't respect you. Is there another story that comes out of this?
Well, I'm going to keep looking into it and looking into, is it physically possible to create a CFT and PFT for women? That's an open question I have. I'm sorry, the same standards. Is that something that's possible? But certainly there will be more stories on this issue.
Right.
I don't have any specifics so far, but it is an important issue to keep an eye on. And as I said, no Marine Corps officials are talking about lowering any kind of standards for women. And I just wanted to make that clear. I know the word lower was used in the story, but that was just to compare the two sets of standards.
Right.
I'm also going to look at what are the other services doing, because my understanding is the standards for women in the Marines are may be tougher than the other services. I don't have that. I haven't looked at the data, but they are certainly tough, and they have got tougher in the past year. So so it looks like the Marine Corps is taking steps to make sure that men and women are on a more equal footing. And, you know, as the Marine Corps takes more action on that area, I will certainly keep writing stories.
Jeff Schogel from the Marine Corps Times has been our guest today. First of all, Jeff, one more question for you. In any of the people that you talked to, Marine types, was there any discussion about doing away with the system, the male-female CFT, and going to one standard?
No.
No.
I asked Training and Education Command that question, and they said no, they are not considering going to one standard. Interestingly enough, the one time I've talked to people and I've asked, well, are you considering waiving boot camp altogether, is whether it's something that may be on the table, it's on the table for cyber operators.
Yeah,
when I talked to the head of cyber, MAR-4 Cyber, I said, you had mentioned if the president's own, for example, doesn't go to boot camp there, they become staff sergeants, and they are the one exception to the rule that every Marine a rifleman.
Right.
And I had asked a British official if they waive standards in the Royal Navy for cyber officials. He said, absolutely, you need the best people. And when the head of MAR4 Cyber was asked about it, she said, well, you know, we want all options on the table. So it's something that is at least being kept open, the door open for lateral accessions for cyber operators, meaning that they would, you know, bypass boot camp and, you know, become some kind of, you know, staff sergeant, and work for MAR4 Cyber. That's the only instance I'm hearing about at the moment.
Well, will God help them? we've seen how we handle other people getting a perceived slight, let alone cutting to the front of the line. So good luck to those contract staff sergeants. Jeff, first of all, it's been a pleasure having you on today. I want to thank you for doing this. I'm certainly a fan of your publications, like most Marines are, and watch it. And maybe in a week or so, you can come back and we'll talk about your work, about what it would be like to light something off in Korea, and how that would work, because I think we're all watching that with great interest. And obviously you wrote about that. So thank you very much for coming on and doing this today.
All right. Thank you so much.
All right. More of All Marine Radio coming up next right here on the All Warrior Radio Network.